agroecology is about having healthy soils, happy plants and thriving humans. And unless you have these three together, you cannot have any of them alone.
Hi, and welcome back to the Cities Rematch podcast. I'm your voice of choice, Johannes Riegler, and this is Reimagining Urban Food Production. So in this episode, we will be jumping back and forth between Sao Paulo in Brazil and Leeds in United Kingdom to explore how cities and communities are redefining their foodscapes for a sustainable future. I'm joined by two remarkable guests who are at the forefront of revolutionizing urban food systems through agroecology and community-driven projects. Chiara Tonaghi is a critical human geographer and scholar activist at Coventry University with a focus on political ecology, agroecology, and politics of spaces. She lives in Leeds, the UK. And my other guest is Marcela Arruda, who's an urbanist and permaculture designer, and she's the CEO of the City Needs You Institute, an NGO that aims at providing public spaces through collective social actions. So join us as Marcela and Chiara share their stories, challenges, and visions for a regenerative, more equitable urban world through the lens of urban food and agroecology. If you like the content, leave a comment or a rating. Follow Cities Reimagined on Instagram for more background stories and more background content. And get connected to me on LinkedIn or send me an email. That is johannes@anthropocene.city. But enough about me having a monologue here. Let's get to some food. Here it is, Reimagining Urban Food Production. Hi, Marcela and Chiara. How are you doing?
Hello. Great. Hello.
Hi.
Nice to be here.
It's really nice to have you on Cities Reimagined today because there is a bit of a story behind how we ended up here. And I think I really like this story. So Chiara, you were part of a JPI Urban Europe project. JPI Urban Europe is the program I work with, and it was called Urbanizing in Place, right? So I remember we met at the kickoff in London. When was that? What year was that?
That was 2018.
2018, yeah. So the project is done now. In 2022, I was organizing a tour to Sao Paulo for the program. And Chiara, you were part of that tour a couple weeks or months before going to Sao Paulo. I actually met Leonardo Marques at another conference at the Placemaking Week in Pontevedra in Spain. And we had a really nice evening together. And I asked him, hey, we go to Brazil or to Sao Paulo, do you have any contacts or any initiatives to visit? And he said, yes, there's one. There's this A Cidade Precisa de Você. You have to visit them or contact them if they have time. And then we planned to visit there. I planned that with your colleague, Karen, to go to the favela of Brasilandia to meet there and see what you're doing. And I think we will hear about that today as well, the project there. But then in the end, it didn't work out because Sao Paulo turns out to be a huge city and distances are long and it takes forever to go from A to B. So it just didn't work out. So I'm super happy to have you on Cities Reimagined today to somehow continue this talk we didn't have back then. For the first question, I have a special one for you. So when you think of agroecology and all your work, what is the food or dish which would reflect your work best?
Well, I would say the stroganoff of the peel of the banana, which is for me a dish that's really Brazilian in a way because it's a Russian dish, but we used to, it's really common to make it here in Brazil, but it's like this reimagining of stroganoff because we make it, I learned in Brasilândia with Celia, which is a cook from there, that you can make it from the peel of the banana. So you can actually eat the peel of the banana. I didn't know that never. It becomes like really a nice texture. It seems like a bit of meat in a way because of the fibers. So So it was something that really changed my whole idea of what actually is possible of cooking. So
I also never thought
it's
about
really
that.
symbolic. Yeah.
Yeah, that you could eat the peel of a banana. How cool is that? And you, Chiara?
Oh, for me, it's definitely a spring salad made with wild herbs that you can forage, with also flowers,
Yeah.
petals, roses, or dandelions flowers.
It sounds like
I really love the wild plants and the energy that give a spring, and I think it's just the wonders of it. It really reminds me of the wonder for food
sounds like a
and
really nice
agroecology.
a bouquet salad. So what fascinates you about the topic of urban food?
Well, for me, I would say it's the food is the most taken for granted thing in the city. For decades, we've really been thinking about everything else apart from food. And the more you realize, the more you think about where the food comes from, the more you realize that you have to change completely the way we live on Earth. And it's really a journey that you do over your time and engaging with food and agroecology. So it's completely transformative.
Yeah, I would say that it's really something that is invisibilized in a way, because also really practically, like the trucks that come to make the distribution, they come at night, so people don't really see what's behind of the fruits in the shelf of the supermarket. And at the same time, I think it shows a lot the challenges we have as society, in a way that we are disengaged, we are apart from the cycles, from the relationship to where it comes from and where is it going to afterwards. So in a way, it's really important for us to actually open our eyes and perceive these relationships, which are all the time transpassing our life in the city, but we don't actually have eyes to see it or to perceive it, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I know that you work on that topic a lot, bringing this together in your daily work, right, Marcella, with having communities engaged in food and food growing themselves. Could you describe a day in your life or a day of your work on urban food?
Well, as your first thing about our connection, it's really marked of the distances and the relationship to movement in the city. So when I'm working with the City Needs You in Brasilândia, the first thing is to get a bus, a 2-hour bus, to actually arrive in Brasilândia. And it's so incredible to see actually the forest arriving in the city, in the sense that I'm going from the center to the periphery. So I'm heading towards the forest, to Serra Cantareira, which is the leftover of Atlantic forest we have in São Paulo. So this is so impressive for me. And this is actually a movement of reconnection. So when I arrive there, I arrive in the Espaço Cultural Jardim Damasceno, which we call as a food culture spot. And I see the neighbors, I see the children trying out some green juice and you know, having another experience of what food can actually be like, besides industrial, this kind of things. And also the women really talking there in the kitchen and also in the garden. So yeah, it's really a familiar, intimate, and really lively. It's like light environment of relationship and coexisting there together. So there would be a bit on that. And later on, maybe after lunch, we would walk on the park and go to Serra Cantareira. So there the climate is much more fresh, you have the shadows of the trees, and you see the beginning of the river that will become the Tietê River, which is like the huge river in São Paulo, which is so polluted and its margins occupied by cars.
And we, Chiara, I think when we were in São Paulo, we also saw this river. Remember that visit when we were somehow caught between the river and the highway and couldn't get away because we couldn't get an Uber? That was quite an experience. But anyway, what about you, Chiara? How would you describe your work on urban food? A day of your work
a
in
day,
urban food.
typical day.
Yeah.
So I would probably wake up really early in the morning with a fly of a Ryanair aircraft on my head. An airport, I live in the urban fringe of Leeds, and the airport here is built on agricultural land. So there are those thoughts about how does the city really impact on the world we are in. I then would walk down the hill, take my daughter to school. On the way back, pass by the allotment, engage with the community there. That's the allotment that I run with my own family. And walking around before going back to the desk, I would probably look at the hills, which are green, but they are mostly non-cultivated for food. So there is a huge potential for really creating a resilient food system around the city. But at the moment, there is either a monoculture or just grass for sheep for meat for export. And then I would probably go back to the desk or either go to a workshop where I bring together people from cities, kitchens, food partnership and farmers and try to develop my next research project. So we are really working around a project on community kitchens. And then I would probably come back home after the whole day and have a meeting with my own friends from the medicinal agroecology circle we are part of and discuss how to use the land that we have just been offered 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow. Is that in Leeds?
Yeah, it's actually it's Otley, it's a market town just outside the main city, but it's part of the metropolitan area. Yeah, so we are looking into how to share agroecology in the community and rebuild medicinal knowledge.
Speaking of agroecology, could you describe what that is?
Okay, well, so there are so many definitions that we have to decide where to start, but someone says it is a way of life. So I quite align with that idea. There are also ways to say that it's both a movement, a practice and a science. So in that sense, it's really a way of bringing together the political work that the movements have been doing re-establish the importance of indigenous knowledge on how to take care of the earth. There is a science that is also trying to bring all the wisdom that has been sidelined by Green Revolution technology and approaches to the land. And then there is also the actual practice of living in more in harmony with the earth. And in that sense, a way of life is an important concept to share because I really think that agroecology shapes, when you embrace it, it really shapes every aspect of your life, from the way you walk, the way you look at plants, the way you all the choices that you make. And I came to agroecology maybe from the back door, I would say. I've been working on public space for many years, and I was interested in insurgent planning. And then when I came to the UK, I realized how much urban agriculture was there as an insurgent practice. And I started to be interested in urban food growing. And then the more I realized how little I knew how to grow, and the more I wanted to know, then I started to explore and discover agroecology. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a time when I was also becoming a mother. So I think that the maybe spiritual elements and mm-hmm. questions around how, we give birth and we give life and how the earth give birth and life to us became more central in my thinking.
Marcella, do you have some thoughts on that?
Yes. I think some principles which are really important for agroecology are like to be sensitive about the culture, to be socially just and economically viable. So in that sense, I think it's a really effective and effective way of dealing with the soil, dealing with plants, dealing with the whole ecosystem, living ecosystem of the earth. And I come in agroecology a lot through permaculture design. So the permaculture would be the culture of the permanence of life on earth. So in that sense, I understand agroecology not only in the perspective of the agro as the food that we eat, but in a perspective of how energy flows into this specific area. So when we're talking about agroecology, we're talking about the resources, we're talking about how the water comes from the rain and you can reuse it to water your plants in the garden, and how actually when you combine different species, you create a more harmonious and harmonic environment, and producing more cooperation and more abundance in that sense, because you're putting together differences which are complementary. So it's really trying to make the best out of the resources you have, and using it with co-responsibility, using it with intelligence and with care in that sense. So I come from that, and also from a lot, as Chiara was saying, my background is as I'm an urbanist and architect. And since 2012, 2013, I've been organizing and creating events of networks of people who are activating, occupying public spaces. So from that I discovered the urban gardens, also with Andrea Biasotti, which is a really nice friend and mentor in a way of this this approach. But it's really, for me, I come from this relationships again of these different places and ways of doing. So yeah, it's a bit on that, I would say.
Yeah, nice. And Marcella, your work is also much more than growing food, or you described that just in terms of agroecology. It also strengthens the network within vulnerable and informal settlements. What do you do exactly in this neighborhood in Brasilândia, and why does it go beyond food production in this urban area, and how does the work improve the quality of the quality of life for people living in the neighborhood?
I would say that we have this project called Eco City in Brasilândia, and it started in 2021. And I would say that the project went through a lot of metamorphosis, in the sense that we are in dialogue with the community and with the identity and needs of the territory. So in the beginning, we started the project a lot from the perception of the whole cycle, the food cycle. So working with urban gardens, with the food culture spot as a place of consumption, distribution, but also education on a more sustainable and healthy food culture. At the end of the cycle, working with composting, in the sense also that closing the circuit, in a more local and circular perspective. But together with the community and with this process of the project in the past few years, I would say that beyond that, beyond the food cycle, we are working to improve climate and community resilience through the food cycle. So right now we're not that much attached into the cycle itself and how to actually close the cycle in the perspective of the neighborhood, because it's something that it would take a lot more time and effort than we as an NGO could actually establish this kind of system. But we are understanding how can we, again, work with the resources we have in the community to actually improve this resilience. We mapped these actors of the food cycle, and we've been giving them technical assistance to actually strengthen the work, to actually be able to make it more professional, access more, generate income, right? Because we're mm-hmm. talking about an informal community in the periphery of São Paulo. So it's really important to actually have opportunities of work. Mm-hmm. And the second axis would be the networks. So fostering networks, because we do believe that it's through networks that we create collective intelligence and exchange technology. So not only in the perspective of the neighborhood, but also in the city and in national level, and here international also, in the mm-hmm. sense that we are learning with this conversation. The perspective of advocacy and incidents on public policies, because we do understand that what we're doing is kind of a prototype, is a pilot, but how do we learn from this experience and are able to give input and in the public policies, right? So we understand that through this local experience and through these networks of people who actually organize themselves to pressure for public policies that respond to the needs of the field. Mm-hmm. And the last axis is based on collective care. Mm-hmm. So we do understand that which is the urban farmer, right? What is her or his face and age? And so we do believe that most of the farmers, especially in São Paulo, I would say, are women. And most of them are migrants also, who bring with them the knowledge, the connection, the spiritual connection also to the earth. But they come to the big city and they lose it in a way that they are, no, I need to make money, I need to... Nah, so they forget, in a way, this knowledge, this relationship, and they don't value it anymore, because what has value in the city are other things, mm-hmm. right? So we do understand this intersectionality of... Mm-hmm. Categories, which are what it means to be a woman, to be a migrant, to be living in the periphery, to have children. So how can we care for this subject, for these people, for this woman who has a lot of different needs?
And that's also, I think you run, or you're involved in a community kitchen in the neighborhood there as well, right?
Yes. It's what I just called food culture spot, because it has a kitchen, and mm-hmm. Which is interesting, the model that was created with them, because in a way it's based on solidarity and care economy, in the sense that women most of the times donate their time to be there to cook, and they cook for all the children who are in the community space. So it's really based on sharing and on caring. But at the same time, these women, we help them to foster and make a collective of cooks. So they are selling their services for local schools, for activities with universities. So it's really nice that now they have a complementary of their income. And at the same time, it's really good, because while they're working in the kitchen, the children are playing outside, they're having different activities to actually be able to take care of themselves while the women are there working. So it's a really beautiful way of tackling all the necessities in just one place, one community place, mm-hmm. which has these multiple functions and activities.
So the value of urmicology is really more than just producing fresh and healthy food. It's more than that, by providing the quality of life and really empowering communities. And agroecology is also more than that. It is addressing a range of issues on topics which are existential for life and for life on this planet. Agroecology can really contribute to addressing the climate and biodiversity crisis. Chiara, do you have some thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, when I went to Argentina, our partners were always starting the discussion saying, well, agroecology is about having healthy soils, happy plants, and thriving humans. And unless you have these three together, you cannot have any of them alone. And I always found this view so inspiring. So when we start practicing agroecology, we really understand that the attitude of care that you have there, and you learn how plants and all the critters that live in the soil, how they collaborate together. So it's really community that thrive on collaboration and mutual dependency. So I think that it's agroecology in that sense bring us to learn how to transfer this more broadly in society. So I think how we can, if we leave behind productivist approaches, just focus on profit, and we start collaborating rather than fighting each other, that's how we can thrive as a society. So I think that the biocultural element of agroecology, so the diversity of our cultures, of us as humans, men and women, and all different other ways in which we manifest ourselves are important. And I think this brings us more to the social dimensions of agroecology. For example, it's also important, very important to have fair working conditions, justice in access to food, and getting rid of other structures of oppression in society, like patriarchy, for example. So I think that the philosophy of agroecology brings more than just good food and fresh food, but an approach to care for the planet and care for the environment that is really a pillar. So that's for me really a very important approach that I've learned through the years.
There's an increased, let's say, concern about food poverty in Europe, and especially the UK, I believe. How do you think agroecology and urban food production and community-based food initiative can offer access to nutritious and affordable food for all?
I think it's very different from what, to some extent, very different from what Marcella was talking about, and from the experiences we have visited in Argentina with our previous research. I think you have to consider that in Europe, and especially in the UK, the vast majority of people in food poverty are in employment, maybe on, you know, employed on salaries well below the real living wage. They have care work, or they are single parents, and the amount of people who are really struggling also with health, with mental health, following the pandemic, is really increasing. So it's not always that people in difficulty can be directly involved in growing food directly. Mm-hmm. But there is really a wealth of experiences, and the agroecology groups and initiatives which are building solidarities between farmers and between kitchens, where a whole range of volunteers and people create really a hub for the community. So in that sense, we get close to maybe the kitchen and the project that Marcella was talking about. So there are various forms of engagement. There is political work around issues of patriarchy or isolation, mental health, but there are also activities to train younger generation, to support them with employment, a bit of retraining around agriculture and growing food, in case people have access to land. Generally, they don't, especially in big mm-hmm. cities. And I think that it's interesting to see how these kitchens are developing collaboration with the farmers, because Farmers, they also struggle typically to have a decent living wage. So how can we pay the farmers a serious amount for their food and at the same time make this food available for people who struggle to even to buy cheap food from the main retail sector? So that's where the political work that the kitchen farmer coalitions are doing in the community is very important. So they are creating and sensitizing the community in creating alternative economies, equity funds, ways where people who can pay more and can pay more, not just to have other food to add to give away to others, but can pay into and support economically the whole political projects of those kitchens. So this is a very important distinction because they don't want to create charity. They really want to create a movement of broader solidarities when we understand that people's well-being is a good, something that we all want to build. So it's really extraordinary to see how many forms these coalitions are emerging. So I do see really this as a way forward.
With all the rising populations worldwide and growing cities and so on, can we actually afford going this extra mile with small-scale farming practices? Or are there forms of food growing not only accessible by done by the well-off who can afford that, by the, let's say, bohemian hipsters who have the financial resources to pay extra for, let's say, well-produced organic food?
I do think we can, and we can go the extra mile. I mean, we have also to say that we think that there is a lot of pressures on land, especially in middle cities. But I must say, I've always been offered land for free by local municipalities. So there is land available for small projects. And the problem is that if you are trying to set up an agroecological farm, probably the land is not enough, or you don't have the right legal structure there to be able to set a company or a business. So in that sense, there are limits on how you can access land for a start in terms of what new entrant farmers need. But we have also, you know, your point is about the pressure on land is absolutely important, because 80% of the land we are losing across Europe is in urban fringes. So there is definitely an issue there. I think community groups are fighting back on this idea that we are stealing and losing land to development. And they are doing this in many different ways. So I think we are doing this through you know, legal cases. Like in Belgium, there have been communities and farmers bringing the city council to court because they've been selling land, and they managed to win the case. And we have in the UK there are movements who are trying to preserve council land that is sitting there unused. Like for example, old greenhouses, they were used to grow flowers. Or county farms that are not in use anymore, and trying to retain them to create different food projects and bring them back in the hands of the community. And I think these are important sources where we can then create employment and create, regenerate a local economy and look into the economy for this, for making food affordable.
That's super interesting also because I'm exchanging with a friend called Stefan Fugger, who he was on the show on local journalism a couple of months ago. And he told me that, so a bit of a context. So we come from the same city, which is 100,000 people. Not nearly as big as Sao Paulo, I would say. But there's a lot of pressure on the land there. So there is, in the fringes of the city, there's a lot of agriculture happening on a very small scale, which gets sold, the produce gets sold on the market. But more and more these farmers are, their leases do not get prolonged and the land gets rezoned into, get rezoned so that they can build industry or some kind of other functions, build on the land, seal the land at least. And what is interesting in Austria is that there's a growing concern about that. There's almost every day there's something on soil sealing at the moment in the newspaper. And what he told me is that also when he just checks the clicks and so on, how many clicks his articles generate, he sees that this is going up and up and up for these kind of topics, and they increase in public awareness, which is interesting. Marcella, do you have some thoughts from Brazil on soil sealing, on the expansion of land or of urban land into agricultural land?
Yes. I would say that that's the biggest challenge, in the sense, as Chiara was saying, of the pressure on land. But at the same time, we live here in Brazil, especially in São Paulo, a lot of pressure on community and citizen initiatives. So it's not only focusing on the land, but also on expelling this kind of initiatives. We should have been like supported by public sector, because public sector cannot arrive in the places that mostly need them, right? Mm-hmm. Need the services. So we have facing this challenge now with our main partner in Brasilândia, that the municipality made a reintegration call, I don't know, to actually expel people from this community center, from this community kitchen. And that's not an isolated case. We have it on even 5 more urban gardens. Wow. And community spaces in São Paulo. So we actually face the social challenge, mainly that the local conservative power actors from the city don't support and even want to actually exterminate the community initiatives. And this comes a lot from the relationship with the squads in the housing squads in the center of the city, all this relationship to movement and to not legitimizing and even making violent actions against the social movements, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a big alarm that we are facing for years now, decades, and we're still struggling with this kind of situation, right? That relates to the lack of regularization mm-hmm. of the initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add a point here, and I think that especially during the pandemic, people realize how fragile is our food system. I think there has been a growing awareness around the question of land and what happened with the land and food. And if we look, like we have this month, we have seen farmers across Europe on the streets and on the square. So there are different type of farmers there asking for very different things. But I think there is lots of media attention. And another thing that is happening at the moment in the UK, we have a right to grow movement that has been a campaign for a number of years. And now we have just had the news that one council in the UK, the whole municipality, has decided to accept and to embrace this demand to grow on public land. Mm-hmm. And we have to see yet where it is going. And the idea is really to understand that we have public farmland and that public farmland is an asset. Mm-hmm. And so I think that things are changing and we are really looking more at, mm-hmm. you know, the resources that there are and how can be used to create mm-hmm. more resilient communities.
Yeah. And also in that sense, I would put that for us to have a pressure on the local government and also raise their awareness of the decision makers, it is necessary, actually. Of course, we have a society pressure on them, but also that we have evidence to actually prove the social and ecological function of this kind of places, right?
Staying with that a little bit, besides the data, what is needed, do you think, to unfold the transformational potential of agroecology or urban food practices? How do you make people realize the role it can play, and especially decision makers who might have a different perspective or might not be aware of the potential of reducing greenhouse gases in the atmosphere with these kind of practices, or healthy produce and keeping people healthy in the cities?
Yeah, I would say that we need to work with this, with the awareness of society and of the decision makers. And in that sense, for us in Brasilândia, it was really important to bring the decision makers into the field, for them to actually see and live this experience, to actually understand the impact that it has. So we brought a local municipal level, like and also we brought in the national level. So we brought both ministries of agriculture and of environment to actually visit the cases and understand this relationship, and how do they actually make tangible sustainable proximities, because we talk a lot about sustainable development and how to actually be able to change it, but we need to put it in the ground. How do we understand sustainable development in the relationships in the territory, in this small scale? And that's when we're going to have like multiple connections and places which are actually making it tangible and making it real, right? So I would say that would be something around there.
Chiara?
I would say that over the past years, that's the struggle we have been trying to win, how to bring together what the work the agroecology is doing with the work that is happening in cities. So we have planners and municipalities often thinking about from the consumption side, problems of food waste and problems of the food chains, but without really thinking all the ecological aspects of food and the livelihood of the farmers and the difficulties. So there is really a gap that we have been trying to fill. And the development of the concept of agroecological urbanism wants to be a container, a place where to start thinking, can we have a form of urbanization that is centered around the caring work of the farmers? And so the work that we have been doing is exactly the one of highlighting what areas of work, where do we need to rebuild social relations around different field of policy and practice. So we have been highlighting 8 domains, and they include questions around housing, the management of waste, neighborhood infrastructures, what happened to urban fringes, really like highlighting what kind of work can we be doing, what can we learn from best practice in each of these 8 areas across the world. So we have an online resource, it's a website called agroecologicalurbanism.org, for example, that is a starting point. And the way we are working now is really to work around, develop research projects or actual research across each of the 8, to work with specific communities and supporting them in cross-sectional learning and cross-fertilization, and do this work with the policymakers.
If you allow me,
sure.
I need to react. No, because I think what Chiara said is crucial, because again, agroecology is so multiple and so complex that we need to frame it into different domains and understand these relationships and bring this technical political actors to actually understand this complexity. When they think and understand this complexity, I think that we will go far beyond where we are now, right? So amazing work, yeah.
Likewise. Nice. We should work together.
I think I already see the next project coming up, hopefully.
Yes.
With the two of you, at least. Do you think that the potential of urban agriculture is present enough in policy debates? That links a little bit with the question from before, but do you think that there has been a shift in Europe or Latin America to elevate this topic higher on the agenda? Do you see a little bit of a change there? Because in Europe, I think there's a lot of discussions, as you said, Chiara, on farming practices. There's a lot of push, but also pull, where larger farmers do not want to, you know, go the extra mile to, take a step back from conventional farming. What has been happening over the last years, and what is the development there?
I think, I don't think it's in general you could just say that farmers don't want to step back, but I think that at the moment, for farmers to go into alternative farming practices, they need more human resources, and they need more knowledge, and they need to be paid better. So the way the current food system is set at the moment is very, very hard for farmers to survive. So we have the two extremes, that people in extreme poverty in cities cannot afford food, and we have farmers who can't afford to operate. So they are both really unhappy. And so I think the part of the reason of the farmer we see on the street are related to the demand that there are on them to improve, but not enough financial support. So we are used to the food being extremely cheap. And if we want to make food more sustainable, we need to have different policies there. I don't think there is any issue with how much land we have, because at the moment we waste 50% of the food we produce. So we could easily feed the whole world with the land we is currently under cultivation. But we need to understand that we need to invest more, and we need to pay more for food. Mm-hmm. And I think that in this respect, there has been some attempts to improve. I mean, the Green New Deal is now being maybe scaled back. It's not been implemented, but there was there the vision to say good food should be there for everyone. Mm-hmm. And in terms of particularly the agroecology movement, I think there is a broader understanding that farming needs to change. I think that the city actors might not yet be there in thinking, or at least thinking, how can we make food available to everyone, and how can this come from the peri-urban or the region, because the economic models are not yet fully developed, or the state is not willing to change the way they support the farmers in the same way that they support an educational system. Mm-hmm. But there is a bit of experimentation. Mm-hmm. There are approaches in Belgium, for example, where they are looking into include access to agroecological food through the NHS, the health system, through a voucher scheme. So I think there are some experiments, mostly coming from the agroecology, but not yet institutional answers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here in Brazil, we are in... even though we're still facing this kind of challenges of regulation of the initiatives, and sometimes this challenge with the local municipal level, we are advancing a lot. We see a lot of advances in the municipal level in São Paulo, and also in the national level, even now, especially with this new president and mm-hmm. yeah, teams, because in the municipal level we have a coordination of agriculture, so that's really forward thinking, in the sense that is a team of people who are really understanding the relationship to the health coordination, to the education. How do we bring the gardens into the schools, for example, or integrate with the center, the health centers, so that they have medicinal plants to actually be able to get it to the public. So in that sense, it's really forward thinking. And also in national level, we have now that we contributed for the development of a national program of urban and peri-urban agriculture that united four different ministries. So it was something really special that came out of also a huge research and investigation of the state of the status of the municipal public policies for urban agriculture. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that we are facing a special moment that we have different public policies which are addressing which are addressing urban agriculture, but still it's curious because still in urban development we have so many steps to go. Like the discussion is going forward in health and education, even sometimes in culture, but in planning and development still a lot of steps behind. So that's why it's so important that we talk about eco-city and agroecological urbanization, in the sense that we bring this back to, okay, who owns the land? Okay, which kind of shared management pacts that we make among these local actors? Oh, zoning. There are so many aspects in urban planning that we need to tackle. So a lot of work still to do.
And I would say that in Europe, we are far behind in this sense, but we have one similarity, which is the difficulty of really bringing along the planning departments. That's very similar. I think probably because that's where many speculative interests are, mm-hmm. and they have always been traditionally very close places where very difficult to establish intersectional interdepartmental work across municipalities. Planning departments are closed, so that's a difficulty, really.
So slowly coming to an end of our conversation, Chiara, what are your three wishes for the future of agroecology?
Okay, so I am. Well, I want to think about that in terms of, you know, agroecology as a movement, a science and a practice. I could say, if we think of agroecology as a movement, my wish for urban agroecology, it is to really build strong bridges with the rural part of the movement. Because I think lots of farmers and organizations really have still the idea of the back to the land, and they are not always fully aware of the way the city is expanding and is making their livelihoods difficult. So the ability to build pedagogies, really build pedagogies for the movement and tools to understand how to articulate their battles and their struggles around the way urbanization is and urban way of life are problematic for them. So that's really my wish. And I think that, you know, when I was in Brazil and I had the opportunity to see the way the MST movement is strategizing, really coming to cities, running kitchens, running festivals, I think was exceptional. And I think we have lots to learn from Latin American movements. My wish for urban agroecology as a practice, it is to see lots more landed community kitchens, so farmers and kitchens coalitions that are supported by policy. So I think that's where they are doing lots of innovation, like bringing together the care for the food with the care for the people, fighting intersectional struggles for emancipation and for quality of life. And at the moment, they are not supported by policy. There is very little appreciation for that work. And urban agroecology as a science, I would say, I would like to see my next project funded so that I can actually provide more systematic analysis of all what's new that is coming from different countries and a movement across different countries. So I'm working with movement actors at the moment to develop a research project so that we can understand better, and then we can share this knowledge across them. And I wish this could become more policy briefs and more videos making and animations to go to the policy community to support.
Yeah, we wish you all the best for that. And I hope you get the funding for that, because then we might come back to you on the show once to have a status update on what is going on there. Marcella, from your work with EcoCities and Cidade de Precisa de Você, what are three things you would advise anybody who wants to change their city for the better?
Yeah, difficult. It's always difficult to make it practical, right? To make it real. But I will try here. So I would say that the first idea would be to actually activate spaces and community around you, and building this sustainable proximity, this sustainable practice in the territory. So that would be the first thing. Like, look around you. Who is around you? Which places are empty? Which are resources that most of the time we see and we don't recognize? So open your eyes to see around you. The second one would be this change of perception. So how can we actually perceive the value of what we call residues? So we call it residue, but where does it go to? Can you actually use it to something else besides just throwing out, remembering that there is no out? So really important to think about it and rethink the way we perceive. And the third one would be to think of the cycles, like to understand the lifelong, the pathways, the flows, that the things that we do, which are the relationships that are supporting them. And in that sense, I would remember a principle from permaculture that is, there is no autonomy without interdependence. So trying also all the time to remember that, okay, we can not do the best with what we have, but which kind of systems we are building in these relationships. So I would say that.
Very nice, Marcella. Jaren, Marcella, thank you so much for this talk. I enjoyed it so much. I think I always find it so inspiring to hear cases and hear from people working in Latin American or Brazilian context. As Chiara said, we have so much to learn also from this context in Europe, and it's really fascinating to build these connections between Europe and Brazil. So every time I have conversations with initiatives from there, it's really, I learned so much from that, and I'm sure our listeners also learned a lot. So thank you so much for all your insight and your knowledge, and I hope to have you on the show at some point again with maybe a project among you or something like that. That would be wonderful.
That would be
thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. See you soon.
Thank you.
That was Reimagining Urban Food Production, and this episode also marks the last thematic episode of season one of Cities Reimagined. I'm saying thematic episode because there's one more in this season, and that is a reflection with my colleague and friend Jonas Bülund. So we will have a discussion or a talk on what comes out or what came out of Cities Reimagined of the episode, what is missing, what are the hooks we need to build up and for the next season, and it will ultimately be the season finale, so the truth will come out. So I hope you will tune in for that one whenever it comes out, probably next week or in 2 weeks. Let's see how it goes with the schedule. Anyway, if you like the content, consider leaving a comment or a rating, or send me an email at johannes@anthropocene.city. Follow Cities Reimagined on Instagram. Yeah, and maybe you want to dive deep into the other episodes of Cities Reimagined. I would like that. I hope you do too. So that's it for today. I hope to catch you soon.